Welcome to Passion Vista Podcast, where we bring you the extraordinary journeys of those who redefine leadership, passion, and purpose. I'm your host, Neetu Marwa. Today's guest is a woman who embodies courage, compassion, and groundbreaking innovation in the field of cardiology. Dr. Nishtha Sareen is not just an interventional cardiologist, she's a voice for women's heart health, a global healthcare leader, and an inspiration for anyone daring to dream beyond borders. From the vibrant streets of India to the cutting-edge corridors of healthcare in the United States, her journey has been a testimony to hard work, resilience, and deep-rooted desire to heal. As medical director of the Women's Heart Program at Ascension St. Thomas Heart in Tennessee and a recipient of the prestigious Gold Steve Award for Woman of the Year in Healthcare, Dr. Sareen is shaping a healthier, more inclusive future. Today, we dive into the story behind the applause, the challenges, the trumps, and the heart that beats behind the healer. A very warm welcome to you, Dr. Nishtha, at Passion Vista Podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Dr. Singh, for having me. I'm doing really well. Good morning from Tennessee. So glad to be on your podcast. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We are honored to have you at our podcast, and we are so sure that we'll be indulging into a lot of amazing innovations that you've done and we'll be sharing with our audience. So we would like to, absolutely, I'm excited too. And we would like to begin with your early life journey, Dr. Sareen, how it actually shaped your dreams of becoming a doctor, and how did your journey into medicine actually begin?
Thank you. That's a great question. You know, it started all back home in India. I was born in Hyderabad and brought up in Udaipur. My dad's a pediatrician. He is dedicated to community work, has done hundreds and hundreds of camps. My earliest memories are listening to children's hearts with him when we used to go on camps, sometimes over the weekends, and the joy that he got out of it. So for me, a physician's job was more community care, taking care of patients at their doorsteps. And that was how I always envisioned it. My mom, who she was the principal of a school, used to wake us up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I have a younger sister, and we used to train in Bharatanatyam and Kathak in the morning before academics absorbed our day. So it was the discipline that she imbibed in us very early. We started doing this when we were 4 or 5 years old. She trained us in Indian Rajasthani dances, where you put pots on your head, pavai. So we used to balance 14 pots on our head. And all those huge disciplinary interventions early on helped shape time management and had a huge impact. When I was doing my med school in India, regarding my medical journey, it was at R&D Medical College in Udaipur. And with God's grace and mom and dad's blessings, we had done really well during my academic year. And so during my internship last year, our dean suggested, why not spend a part of your internship in Harvard Medical School in Boston? So I applied for it. Thank God we got through it. And then I spent last few months of my internship at Harvard Medical School. And that's when I realized that if you really want to have an impact on guidelines and bring a global impact on a health condition, this is where you want to do it. So I took my exams, did my internal medicine, my cardiology, my interventional cardiology, master's in public health. It was 15 years of studying. And then we started this program for women heart health.
Wow. Really, it's a inspirational story. Waking up at 3 a.m. My God, I feel a lot of people go to sleep at 3 a.m. and you're waking up. That's really a big deal. So how is it? Was it easy initially? Or I mean, it's a big thing that you have done. So is it affecting your role or journey right now also?
So waking up at 3 a.m. was a huge benefit to me because, you know, as it is said, if you want to really do better, you got to work harder and you got to start before everybody else starts, right? So the fact that I was used to getting up early, that early in the morning, I do know for sure when I was doing my internal medicine and when I was doing my cardiology fellowship, I had no problem getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning and going to the hospital and getting a head start before the round started. So it definitely helped.
Wonderful. So are you imbibing the same thing in your children also?
It's not that easy. So not yet. We have a 6-year-old daughter, Nisa. We try to discipline her, but it's not the same. She doesn't get up at 3 o'clock in the morning by any means.
So that's really, really wonderful to know. What is your current routine? So at what time do you start now?
So usually I get up around 4:30 in the morning. I do workout every day for heart health, but typically I do HIIT workouts, a Tabata workout. So my workouts are 15 minutes or 20 minutes. And then I get ready and I have a wonderful husband who participates in the care of the daughter 1,000%. I couldn't have done it without him. So we take turns and one day I'll wake her up and we have a cuddle time for 10 minutes and then she gets up, she gets ready and we prepare breakfast for her. If I have to leave at, sometimes we have meetings at 6:30 in the morning, so I'll leave. And then Abhishek takes care of Nisa and drops her to school. And if not, if he has a meeting, then I do it and I drop her to school. So
that,
we take turns.
That's really, you know, amazing how you both are actually managing with the time management and, of course, respecting each other's professions and, you know, upbringing of a new generation.
Thank you. That's very well said.
So what role did your family, mentors, or upbringing plane giving you the strength to pursue such an ambition career internationally? I'm sure this would have not been easy for you to, you know, travel down from India to abroad. So how actually did you cope up with this?
That's a great question because, you know, it was, you know, in India, you never take care of your bank accounts. You know, your mom and dad take care of it. You have no idea of social security. So that was one of my early memories and a huge steep learning curve. When I came to the United States, it was in New York. And I had to get my driver's license. I actually failed it a couple of times in my driving test because I was hitting the curb. They're very, very strict about it. And then going to social security office and getting your own bank account, using your credit card, keeping an idea of your credit score, you know, where are you saving amount, which card to use, where all these were huge learning experiences, but also professionally, you know, learning about how to present cases is very different compared to how we did it in India. So the pathology is pretty much similar, but there's some difference. For instance, there's more infections in India. There's no malignancy in the United States, more non-communicable diseases in the United States. So that was a learning curve. But my mentors and my parents played a critical role. Their training helped a lot. You know, those are the principles that are imbibed in you. Those are what you work by, and that's really the pillar of what you do. So, you know, the discipline and the training mom and dad gave me, the values they gave me really, really pushed me through. There were times when, so one of the things I really wanted to do, Tata Neetu, was to bring women heart health in the forefront. Now, in cardiology, it's mainly men. Surgeons, I'm a surgeon, I'm an interventional cardiologist, so I do stents. There are hardly any women in, for instance, in Michigan, north of a particular area in thousands of miles, I was the only female interventional cardiologist. So when I used to walk into a room of 60, 70 interventional cardiologists, all men, and I was the only female, nobody was, there's so much excitement around new devices, new drugs, which improve survival by 1%, 2%. But nobody was talking about heart health in women, which kills more women than all cancers combined. It's a bigger killer, 6 times bigger killer than breast cancer. It is the largest killer and nobody wanted to talk about it. So that was my biggest struggle of trying to break the ice and say we need to really focus on it. And frankly, I still have that struggle to this date. We really need people to advocate, stand up and say it's not okay. For instance, there's a condition called postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. It's a medical jargon, POTS. Affects young girls. They pass out, they have palpitations, they have a terrible lifestyle. They're just marked as the weak child in the family. Mm-hmm. And 75% of them are labeled with mental illnesses, end up in mental hospitals. So, and nobody is talking about it, though it is actually a heart condition. It's a cardiovascular condition. So things like that, really, I couldn't, and perhaps it's the values that mom and dad gave us, that I couldn't make peace with it and move on. I had to be sure we did something about it. So that's where my mentors really came in, helped push the cause. And special kudos to Dr. Sameen Sharma from Mount Sinai, who trained me in interventional cardiology. I want to also do a shout out for Dr. John Cotiant, who trained me in cardiology. Dr. Shukri David, who helped me, who's the person who first appointed me in the role of a Women Heart Program director. So all of these people, with what they have done, and Dr. Karthik Anand, who is our ACC president for Michigan, was a huge influence when I was training to be a fellow and also in my career. So I really owe this to them for pushing the cause and making this happen.
That's really, really wonderful. You know, you're remembering your mentors and already always giving them gratitude. I mean, that shows how humble you are and how down to earth you are. That's really beautiful.
That's very sweet of you to say, but you know, there are, honestly, we all want to do things. And if there's somebody who doesn't push it for us, it really makes it challenging. And also, though these are all physicians, also people who are in leadership. For instance, okay, we had Ms. Carol Schmidt. She's our CEO who really pushed the cause in Michigan. Fahad Tahir in Nashville. Dr. Doug Apple, Dr. Ed Fry, Dr. Rich Fogel. I mean, the list of people who have supported this cause and this passion is huge and instrumental.
Wonderful, wonderful. You've been playing a trailblazing role in creating specialized heart care program called Ascension Woman Heart Program. So what inspired you to focus on a woman cardiovascular health so deeply?
So, you know, when I was training in cardiology and I used to look at the clinical trials, and whenever I look at a trial, I want to see, is this applicable to me? Is it applicable to my daughter? Mm-hmm. And I would go to the demographics table and look at the percentage of women. And it's never been more than 15, 20% of women. So all the studies we have, 85, 90% of the people are men. Now, when I do interventional cardiology, I'm taking care of patients with heart attack. And men will have chest pain, chest pressure, going to the jaw, going to the arm, going down, going to the shoulder. But women would come with subtle symptoms, just feeling nauseous, just not feeling right, just having lightheadedness, because they present differently. And what this leads to is that they don't get care in time. We only have 90 minutes to save a heart when you're having a heart attack. Their hearts typically do not get saved. They don't do well with procedures and with medications as men do. And unfortunately, what I also learned was that these devices and the therapies are not offered to women as frequently as they should be. So when all of this came together, I could see that disparity, that the disparate care, the lack of the gap that existed. So I went ahead and did master's in public health from University of Nevada to understand the impact of it on the population, and then healthcare economics from Harvard Medical School to understand the economic impact of what we are doing. And based upon that study and based upon that training, I was able to create one of our first women heart programs.
Wow, that's really wonderful. So what, you know, initial screening, or, you know, at times you're very correct that, you know, woman goes through so many things, but, you know, we take it so lightly. Even talk about me, I know I have a migraine, but I'll be like, that's okay, it'll go with time, or, you know, probably I need to calm down or take less stress, like that. So what do you think that a woman should be taking care of herself, what points that she is not prone to heart diseases, and even if she is, let's assume she's under a heart attack or something like that, she immediately gets to know and she actually understands, okay, this is thing is something going on and when I need an action on it.
So even with our cultural and community strings that we have, this has gone through my head so many times, because you're absolutely right. If the community, if we don't understand our symptoms and we don't go to the physician, how are they ever going to treat us, right?
Correct.
The problem is that women put everybody else ahead of themselves. They put themselves towards the end. So they will not come to the doctor's appointment if there's an issue with their kid or their husband. Everybody else in the family comes first, which is impossible to change. I do think that we need to be aware that our heart attack feels different, stroke feels different. We have to understand that diabetes in a woman is a much bigger animal compared to men. When a man has diabetes, the risk of heart disease is 2 times. When a woman has diabetes, the risk of heart disease is 6 times. It's a bigger animal. Atrial fibrillation, irregular heart rhythm. A woman being a female is a risk factor for having more clots, more strokes. So we are not just men with different set of organs. We are women who are completely built different ground up. We are a different set of human beings. We are different. We are a completely different animal when it comes to how diseases treat us.
True,
we have to
true.
Understand that. And we have to understand that when we exercise, when we eat healthy, we are more likely to benefit from it compared to our male counterparts. So exercising, eating healthy is really important. We also have to understand that we are in the kitchen. We are the ones who decide the heart health of everybody in the family. Little things, for instance, when we are cooking, avocado oil for high temperature cooking, olive oil for low temperature cooking are great. If you use olive oil for high temperature cooking, all the goodness of the oil is gone. We have to understand that there are little adjustments. For instance, instead of white rice, just put brown rice or brown quinoa, brown pasta. Instead of pop or juice on the table, it should be water. Instead of fruits, vegetables. If you're doing fruits, look up the glycemic index of the fruit. It's a simple Google. Glycemic index is high, the fruit is bad. So berries are really good for you as much as you can. Banana, not so much. Grapes, not so much. So these little adjustments go a long way. But if we were to really think deeply, why is men's heart health, why has it made tremendous strides? It's because of women. Because we take care of the men in our family. We make sure they eat right. Now, if a husband in the family has a heart attack, the person who's on top of it is his wife. She's making sure he gets the right food, he takes the medications. Same has to happen for women. Men will have to take the charge to say, we got to take care of the women in our family.
Correct. Absolutely. I completely agree with you. So, doctor, I have another very essential question, because I feel that the audience could connect with this very important question about olive oil and avocado oil. The awareness is very less. We have a lot of oils, you know, like in olive oil, we have extra virgin olive oil or just virgin olive oil or simple olive oil. So, you know, we usually tend to get confused, you know, like even I am also using extra virgin olive oil. But at times, yes, I'm using it at a high temperature because probably we are making a dosa or an omelette. We try to put it in that and we say, no, olive oil is very healthy, so you should go for it. But we a lot of times forget that which olive oil or avocado oil is good at what level. So could you throw some light on this topic?
Absolutely. So one of the things I'd say, if you're using, for instance, for dosha or for something that's, a little bit of oil is required, or omelets for that matter, or parathas for that matter. So I would use avocado oil. For high temperature cooking, it's a great oil. You can use it without an issue. So I always keep avocado oil. And then olive oil, extra virgin olive oil is the best form of olive oil. And I usually throw it on our salads, for instance. So if you're making salad, you can add a little bit of extra virgin olive oil to it. If you just have a toasted bread and you want to throw some oil on it, that's what I do. I never keep butter in my house. There is no butter in my house. Because when it's not there, nobody can use it. And we don't keep frying oil in our house. So if you really want to fry and eat, you have to use the air fryer. When you're using air fryer, you can just spray, you get avocado oil sprays, which are actually much better than just the bottle. So sprays are a smarter way because you get very little amount of oil every time.
And how about the olive oils that are said that virgin olive oil or just No, we have a other form of olive oil too. I'm not getting the exact name, I guess. But how about them?
So all the olive oils are good for you. Of course, the ones that's more superior is the extra virgin olive oil. So there's grading with an olive oil. But even if you can get to a virgin olive oil or just a plain olive oil, it's better than nothing. It's almost like, you know, matcha green tea. There is matcha green tea that is ceremonial, that is like the best form. And then you have all grades of it. But any form of matcha green tea is good for you.
Wonderful, wonderful. So I'm just crisping that out that, you know, olive oil in any form should not be heated. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Mm-hmm. Mm. That's correct.
Because a lot of people are frying in olive oil and cooking parathas in olive oil and making their lot of dishes in olive oil. And they're like, we are the best because we're into the healthiest oil we are eating.
No, because the nature of the olive oil changes and all the goodness of the oil goes away. And in fact, it can become harmful. So absolutely, yeah, high temperature cooking, no olive oil.
And which oil would you suggest to those who are actually frying and eating food? I mean, sometimes they have to, like Indian food, talk about puris.
Yeah. So, you know, I have, even for puris and for pani patashas too, I try to do air fryer. And, you know, it's a curve, but ultimately you get there and it turns out just fine. But if you have to fry, canola oil is fine. You know, once in a while, if you want to use canola oil, that's fine. I would not refry in the same oil, which is something that also a lot of women do. We'll save the oil, we'll fry again. That's not healthy. And it actually is pretty toxic for the family.
Correct, correct. That was a great information that you've shared with us. Thank you so much for this information.
It's my pleasure.
So there are a lot of misconceptions around the heart disease of women. So what are the biggest myths you want to burst with us?
So I'd say the misconceptions, the biggest myth is one, that it's in our brain. So when I get a lot of women coming to me, their most common complaints, they've been for years, they've been to multiple doctors, and they start their conversation by saying, you know, I think it's just in my head, but I still want to tell you this. And it breaks my heart because they have been told over and over again, there's nothing wrong with them. So, and the part of it is when we look at our medical school education, when we look at our residency and medical training years, we spend 12 years, but nobody talks about heart conditions that affect women disproportionately. For instance, you know, if it's menopause occurring before 40 years of age, it increases heart disease risk by 25%. Or three or more kids, like you talked about, three or more children, increases the risk by 20%. Or if you've had eclampsia, preeclampsia, you've had diabetes, gestational diabetes during one of the pregnancies, increases your heart disease risk significantly. We just don't ask those questions. We don't learn about POTS that we talked about, or microvascular angina, which is a huge pandemic. Microvascular angina, microvascular disease, is a condition that affects women disproportionately. They will have chest pain, chest pressure. All the testing comes back okay, including heart catheterization. And they're told it's not in their heart. But now we know, Europeans have learned about it years ago. We got it endorsed in our American guidelines in 2021, that there's a condition called microvascular disease, which you can detect by testing. You treat them. And if you don't treat them, those women are at higher risk of stroke and death. So we need to really, we should be looking for it by our guidelines, but we are still lagging behind in learning about it and knowing about it and teaching about it. So, you know, there are so many gaps which need to be filled. And I think there are so many myths when it comes to women heart health, but it has to start by educating the physicians and the community. Now, when we do a heart cath, traditionally what happens is we go through the wrist or we go through the groin, go in zoop, zoop, 90% of the time it's wrist, go zoop, 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 go in, get into the coronary artery and we take pictures. Within 15, 20 minutes, you have an answer. That's how we did it traditionally. But as you can imagine, it's an eye test. You're just looking at the angiogram and you're looking at blockage. Now we have cameras. We call it OCT and IVUS, where we can put a camera inside the artery and look at what kind of plaque do you have? What kind of blockage do you have? How likely is that blockage to cause a heart attack? Because is there calcium? Is there more lipid? Is there more platelets? So then we can target the treatment based upon that. So that's one of the imaging that's really important, particularly in women. And then the other is microvascular testing. which is very underutilized, should be tremendously more utilized. And it is, to me, it's disservice to our patients if we are not providing that service to them when it's indicated, clinically indicated. And because you are going to decrease the risk of strokes, heart attacks in these women, and they suffer. I mean, 50% of women who have chest pains with open arteries coming from their heart are unable to work. They retire early. They have dementia. They have renal dysfunction. So it's a big paradigm. There is so much evolving in technology. We have to keep up with it. And we have to be sure that that technology is being used for closing the gaps in heart health in women.
Wow, that's so much of information you've shared with us. And I think this is very essential for all of us to understand and take care of our heart health and, of course, ourselves. So, Dr. Nishtha, I would like to understand a little bit more about your program, that is Ascension Women Heart Program. And you have 8 clinics, which is really a great thing that you've been doing. You have 8 clinics in Michigan. How is the setup? I mean, I'm sure it would not have been easy for you, setting it up. So what are your future plans? I would like to know more about it.
Absolutely. So, in Michigan, this started in 2021. So it's been a while. And when we started, I was pleasantly surprised by the fact that there was such a tremendous response from women, that women actually got up and said, you know what, we like this, we want this. We want to be prioritized. We want heart health to not be a luxury. We want it to be a necessity. We want it at our doorstep. And they loved it. We had tremendous response thanks to our leadership at Ascension, because believe me, we have pitched this idea to so many health systems. It takes a lot of support, a lot of push. And in Michigan, we were able to have 8 clinics come up, and all doing the same concept of same algorithms, stratifying women, looking at every stage of a woman's life. We look at pregnancy. We look at menopause. I mean, who talks about menopausal issues in women? You know, the most common cause of, I mean, it's a big deal, and it's the majority of our life. Pregnancy is only a small section. So talking about those conditions, how heart disease risk increases during menopause. So we started addressing those, and we have very dedicated dietitian there. We had exercise physiology, all resources that women need to not only diagnose and treat heart disease, but to prevent it. That was the goal. Then I came to Tennessee, and we have 3 centers here already up and running within a course of 6 months, and we're going to expand. And tremendous response thanks to the leadership. But the 2 states have had tremendous response, and women are seeing it, women want it, and they will advocate for it. And we just can't wait to see how this goes beyond borders. As you said, you know, at the root of all of this is that we all come from the same seed. We are all the same. It's across borders, but we're all the same. And we got to make sure the services that are available to women in one part of the world are available everywhere, whether it's available via teleconsult, whether it's available in person. But we got to make it happen. I think that should be a priority.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. And I really admire the way you have actually chosen, the concept of woman heart health. I think this has been missing in our entire clinical hospitals and everywhere, that, you know, we women actually are not taking care of ourselves that much. Actually, we should take care of. And this is a very sensitive and very important topic that you're working upon. And I really want to thank you for this wonderful detailing that you've shared with us.
It's been my pleasure. What you're doing here, Dr. Neetu, also needs acknowledgement, you know, trying to generate awareness. How can we ever get this information to the people if we don't have you? So thank you for doing this. Truly grateful for what you're doing. You're doing a huge community work, and very proud to be here today with you.
Absolutely a pleasure. Absolutely a pleasure.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Nishtha, we would like to firstly congratulate you on winning Gold Steve Award for Women of the Year in healthcare. It is a phenomenal achievement and recognition, of course, that you've gained personally and professionally. So we would really want to hear your words on it.
Well, thank you. It was a huge, you know, surprise because we went there when we were nominated, and it was a great event. Lots of talented people. The fact that they recognized the program and they recognized me makes me feel, it warms my heart, because that goes to tell you that there is appreciation for and advocacy for heart health in women, which this is all about. So I'm truly grateful for it, but also it was a humbling experience to see so many super talented people around me doing such great work in the community and making a difference.
That's really wonderful. You're doing a great job, so you know you deserve it.
Thank you. That's very kind of you to say. Thank you.
So you've led multidisciplinary teams across states. What is the leadership lesson you have learned while leading such diverse, high-pressure environments?
That's a great question. And, you know, it is something that I just learned as I worked in that high-pressure environment when you have all kinds of personalities around you. There are people who are at different levels of skill set. Some of them are efficient, some of them are not. And you have to, it's fine work trying to make sure everybody works and the program keeps developing on whatever you're trying to accomplish. I think there's also a difference in different work environments, and every market, every region needs something different. They have their own strengths, they have their own weakness. And I'm comparing Michigan to Tennessee, and I'm comparing different areas in Michigan and different areas in Tennessee to each other. So when I walk into a program to create a women heart health program, I don't go there with my own agenda. I know what the goal is going to be, is to make that place better, to make heart health better in that area. But every area, based upon their own strengths and weaknesses, have things that they need, and there are things that need to be polished. And I think the greatest work is trying to recognize that and then being there to deliver it. So it's more like a servant care, where the leadership style is a servant leadership style, where you go, you see what they need, and you provide it.
Wonderful. What a beautiful message, actually, you've given to all of us. I must appreciate that.
Thank you. That's very sweet of you.
So, faith, philosophy, or mindset, what has been your bigger inner compass during these challenging times?
As you can imagine, that all three of them are really important. Faith's important. Philosophy is also very important, and mindset is critical because that's something you're deep rooted in. But if I were to select one of the three, I do think faith is what I would say. You know, a lot of times we make every effort, and you will do everything right. I mean, you think through everything, but still nature will find a way to make things not work. So there will be times when you have exhausted everything and still things don't work. And it's just the law of nature. I think at that point, what drives you forward is the faith that, you know, things are going to be fine. And that's one thing I'm grateful for in my background in India, because we are not as religious, but the family is very spiritual. And so we believe in God, and, you know, we still have a temple in our house here. And it's the faith and knowing that there is a higher power up there that will guide you. That is watching you, and that's going to bless you if you do the right thing for the right cause and your heart is in the right space. So for me, of those three, I think faith would win.
Wow. Actually, and being a doctor, I think you would have seen a lot of miracles happening too with faith and spirituality. Have you?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, the field where I am, where we have a patient with heart attack who is literally, a lot of them are just dying on the table, and we are just trying to save them. And sometimes, you know, mortality or death rate is almost 1 in 2. And there are miracles that happen, and we see these people walk out and see us in the office in a couple of weeks, and it just warms your heart and goes to tell you that there is definitely something beyond what we understand that protects us.
Right. So, Dr. Nishtha, on this, I have a question coming up out of a lot of curiosity, that you know, you see a lot of tensions, trauma, and as you've mentioned that you know, 1 out of 2 is not coming out. So this would have been very heartbreaking for you, and at times it's difficult. I mean, you've seen a dead body, and you're coming back home. You are working, you have children, you have family. So how do you actually cope up with this? Because for a normal human being, it's absolutely traumatizing and not easy. So how do you manage this?
It's a great question, because you know, this is something that my mom told me when we were going into medicine. And she said that, you know, when you go to work, when you come back home, work, there's going to be stress. There's going to be things that are going to happen. When you come back home, you cannot bring work home. You leave work at work. So for me, when I come home, believe me, when there's a patient who has bad outcome, and it always is in the back of your mind, it's always there. But if a patient is struggling in the hospital, you are thinking about that patient the whole time. It's impossible to let that go. But when you come home, I just put myself in that bucket of being a mom. And it is gratifying. Our daughter, 6-year-old Nisa, my husband, we are my happy places. When I come home, I know I'm loved. I know this is what the bigger picture is. This is what matters in the longest run. So, you know, being close to family, having their support, talking to them, staying connected with them, and coming back to faith. It's really, really important. And, you know, it's a whole different session, but honestly, mental health in people who do high stress job is very important.
Absolutely. You know, you need to have that amazing mindset that lets you focus on your work and your family, and actually lets you differentiate between the two. So hats off to your mindset, I would say that.
Thank you so much. I think it's all what's imbibed. I think it's my mom. She's the one whose mindset this truly is.
So Dr. Nishtha, for young women in India or anywhere dreaming of a global medical career, what's your biggest piece of advice for them?
So I'd say that my biggest piece of advice is that, you know, no matter how well you do everything, how well you think through everything, there will be times when there will absolutely be times when things will not go right. And you will go, you know, it's going to push you down to the floor, and you're going to feel crumpled. That's a part of growing up, because remember that the size of a champion is not by how high you go in your life, what your trajectory is. It's about how high you rise every time you fall. So if you fall down, know that this is a test. You got to get up and keep moving, and things will change.
Absolutely beautiful message that you've been sharing with our audience. Thank you so much for that. So moving forward, I would now like to understand that if you could change one thing in women's health particularly, and the heart health, what is treated globally, so what that would be?
I would say the one thing I would change in women globally would be the ability for them to understand their risks and get access. It's about treating it at the root cause. It's for them to know that they matter, that they are important, and they have to understand that every family member is great, they matter. It's a man or a woman. When a life is lost, a really important person is lost. But when a mother is lost, a whole generation is lost, a whole future is lost, a family is lost. And they have to understand it. They have to prioritize themselves. So if there's one thing I would actually change, it's not going to be so much in the medical field itself. It's going to be at the level of our patients, our community, them to understand that they matter, and they have to speak up, and they have to show up.
Wonderful, wonderful. And before we close our podcast and say a goodbye, I'm sure one great message from Dr. Serene, which she wants to give to everyone, men, women, children, to our audience from her. So please, Dr. Serene, the stage is all yours.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Neetu. I'll say that, you know, there are lots of things we can do. There are lots of things we dream about. But the only way we can make a difference is by working together. So whether it's the men in the community, is the women in the community, is the children, we all have to be on the same page. We have to know that whatever we stand for, whether it's heart health in men, whether it's heart health in women, it's heart health in children, that it matters, it's our priority, and we have to put our energies to make that difference. And only then will a change happen. Thank you for having me here.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much. It was absolutely pleasure, and it's absolutely my pleasure to host you today in Passion Vista podcast. As I feel this message and the content that we have created will be spreading a lot of lovely messages across the globe, that how important it is to take care of women's health, and especially the heart health, which you've greatly working upon. So I think this is it from us.
Thank you. Very nice meeting you. Take care. I'll stay in touch.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Dr. Serene. Dr. Serene, your journey reminds us that true leadership is not just about titles. It's about heart. It's about crossing oceans, breaking barriers, and building systems that care not just for the body, but for the person. To everyone listening, let today's story be a reminder. Dreams have no borders, and care knows no gender. Keep leading with heart, and keep chasing those dreams with purpose. This is me, Neetu Marwa, signing off from Passion Vista podcast, where passion meets possibility. Until next time, stay inspired, stay bold, and stay tuned with Passion Vista podcast.